Scammers posing as sheriff deputies claiming they have a warrant for your arrest.
It was $3,400, which is a lot.
Hear the warning from neighbors called within hours of each other and how to know if a call is real or fake. Then WREL is analyzing the historic decision to disqualify former President Donald Trump from the ballot in Colorado. How the ruling could affect the 2024 presidential election.
I've got the timeline for the next chance of rain that could put a big kink in your holiday travel plans.
Let's start with this warning for you tonight about a scam that's fooling people in our area to send thousands of dollars to people posing as sheriff's deputies. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Chatham, Durham, Lee, Wayne, and Edgecombe counties have all put out an alert about this. Investigators say the scammers demand money, claiming you'll be arrested for missing a court date or jury duty.
It's all bogus. None of it's real. But the Chatham County Sheriff's Office tells us at least four people have fallen for this so far, one of them sharing their story with WREL's Matt Tallhelm.
In the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, an urgent phone call from the sheriff's office for missing jury duty can catch anyone off guard.
He said, this is so-and-so from the Chatham County Sheriff's Office. We have three warrants for your arrest.
Cynthia Raxter and her neighbor Jamie Hager both got that call within hours of each other.
I was mostly irritated that this was interrupting my whole day. I'm going to have to go down there and deal with this.
The deputy offered them a way out of that hassle, pay a bond until they could clear up the confusion with the court.
The alternative is being arrested and put in a car, and my neighbor's looking out the window with me in handcuffs.
But that's where their stories stray. Raxter went to the credit union where an alert teller noticed something seemed off.
And I looked at her and I said, I missed jury duty and I've got to go pay bail. And she said, it's a scam. It's a scam.
Hager's deputy sent her to this CVS.
It's an ATM, right? And it asks you and then has Liberty X as an option. And you press that option, it says enter your code.
She followed the instructions and in an instant lost money to the scammer.
It was $3,400, which is a lot. And it mostly just makes me really angry because, you know, you work really hard for your money.
It's not one person sitting in a room doing this. It's organized crime that's doing this.
Chatham County Sheriff Mike Robertson says these scammers are skilled at manipulating and isolating their victims.
They want to get you in an emotional state to make a quick decision and then close down the avenues you have to question what they're saying.
That's why these neighbors are sharing their experience as a warning to others this holiday season.
They know you're busy. They know it's a stressful time. It's a good enough plausible story to be really believable, and you're just trying to take care of things.
Sheriff Robertson says it's nearly impossible to track down these scammers because they can actually spoof the real sheriff's office number. Here's what happens when you dial that deputy who called the neighbors.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
The number disconnected. Matt Tallhelm, WREL News, Chatham County.
It just makes you, it's infuriating what people will do. Sheriff's office, they say they'll never call you or demand payment to avoid being arrested. That's never going to happen. Sheriff Robinson in Chatham County encourages people to report these calls so they can keep up with the changing tactics that these scammers use and share those with the community.
Right now in the Live Center, Dan, the mayor pro tem out in the Durham area, Mark Anthony Middleton, saying he is concerned crime will go up because of this right here. Remember that vote 4-2 not to extend the ShotSpotter contract out there? Well, about 2 hours ago, those devices have gone silent. They're still in place, but they're no longer communicating with the police department. This is the message he put out on Facebook about 5 to 10 minutes ago. Here are the stats. He says, we also learned that 70% of ShotSpotter alerts that the police department responded to did not have a corresponding 911 call, meaning that the police responded there to no calls. It was just those alerts. He goes on to say, now it's up to the residents in Durham to keep themselves safe by picking up the phone if they hear anything at all that sounds like a gunshot. Take a listen.
I'm calling on all residents in our city tonight to become what I call a shot caller. Call 911 no matter what. It may save someone's life.
More with him later this evening on Fox 50 at 10 and WREL 11. He goes on to tell me in that Zoom we just recorded a few minutes ago, he is concerned more people will lose their lives with this device now offline, and hoping that in a couple of months when more studies come back, that they will be brought back on. Back to you.
All right, Mark, thank you. New numbers now from the state health department showing more people getting sick from flu, RSV, and COVID. The pink line that you see on this graph here, those are the COVID cases. You can see the numbers are high. They are lower than this time last year, but they are high. Flu cases are the ones in yellow. That number has gone up over the past few weeks. They are three times higher than this time last year.
This North Carolina man who escaped from a Virginia prison earlier this year will now spend even more time behind bars. He was sentenced to over two decades for drug trafficking. WREL's Shelley Jackson found out what it took to put this case to rest.
The Department of Justice says he was one of the biggest drug traffickers in eastern North Carolina, but now he's serving more than two decades in federal prison for selling coke, fentanyl, and crack.
Bruce Callahan, the Robeson County drug trafficker who escaped custody earlier this year, is spending more than two decades in federal prison for selling crack, cocaine, and fentanyl.
25 years in federal prison for somebody the age of Bruce Callahan, he will be an old man the day he walks out of those prison gates if he doesn't leave in a pine box.
Easley says Callahan built a drug enterprise in Robeson County using Mexican and Honduran contacts he made while serving an earlier sentence in federal prison.
And he boasted that he had access to dozens and dozens of kilos of narcotics through suppliers in Honduras and Mexico at any given time.
The Robeson County Sheriff's Office and the ATF had launched an investigation into Callahan in 2021 with undercover agents buying crack and cocaine from Callahan's home. The 45-year-old was arrested in September 2021 during a traffic stop. Investigators found 2 kilos of fentanyl in the back seat of the vehicle and cocaine and a gun at his home. Callahan was in custody on charges related to that when he escaped from Piedmont Regional Jail in Virginia last May. He was sentenced to 20 months in custody with 3 years probation for that escape. This is the fourth 25-year sentence recently dealt to drug traffickers in North Carolina.
We want to make the message clear that we are absolutely leaning in to prosecuting those who are trafficking fentanyl into our communities, and we hope that this 25-year sentence for Bruce Callahan sends a strong message.
And that other inmate who escaped, Aldermaren Sotelo, is in Mexico where he was arrested. Sotelo and his brother were charged in the murder of a Wake County deputy last year. Shelley Jackson, WREL News, Raleigh.
An Orange County deputy will not face charges for shooting a man while serving a warrant. An FBI investigation found that Derek Williams tried to shoot at Deputy Brandon Kern during the August incident, but the gun malfunctioned. The report said Deputy Kern shot Williams as he ran toward other deputies with the gun. The district attorney said the deputy was justified in his actions. Williams survived the shooting with a collapsed lung.
Let's take a look outside Beach Mountain. I love skiing at night. It's always fun, kind of a different atmosphere. Not nearly as many people out on the slopes. It's a good time. These folks are bundled up, as you would be if you were skiing right now. But, hey, Mike Mays, you know, we had a cold one last night. It's kind of been a trend, below freezing again tonight.
Yeah, and Dan, in fact, we're already there in many locations at 32, Siler City, Roxborough, Henderson, Lewisburg. It's going to be another very cold night and perhaps a frosty night as well. Take a look at some of our southern counties, 33 in Sanford, 39 in Fayetteville, 34 in Smithfield. We'll have mainly clear skies. And hour by hour here in the Triangle, by 8 o'clock we're at 36, by 11 o'clock we're 33. Tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. we're expecting about 26, and frost will be in the area. Forecast lows tonight, 23 at Clarksville, 22 at Roxborough, 22 at Siler City, 26 in Wilson, and then farther south, 27 in Fayetteville, 22 in Sanford. In the days ahead, temperatures will warm up, and by the time we get to Christmas night and the day after, we're looking at the next potential soaking. I'll outline that with Futurecast coming up in less than 15 minutes, Dan.
Talk to you then. Thanks, Mike.
Right now in the Live Center, just getting an update from the Wake County Sheriff's Department. They've arrested this man right here, identified as 31-year-old Marco Ramirez Gonzalez. They say he is the suspect tied to that shooting. We reported on his breaking news last night off of Old Wake Forest Road. This is some video from the scene. The WREL breaking news tracker was there when it happened. The victim in this case did have a gunshot wound to his face, taken to the hospital with serious injuries. The motive behind all of this, why this all unfolded, is still under investigation. As for the suspect here, Ramirez Gonzalez. He's facing several charges, including assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill or inflicting serious injury. He is in the Wake County Jail this evening. Bond has not been set. He'll go through the court process and likely face a judge here shortly. We'll keep you up to date on this story as it breaks, with the police and the sheriff's office now releasing new information, all new here at 7 o'clock. Back to you.
Mark, thanks for the update. 28 juveniles ages 13 to 15 have been charged with murder in our state this year. In 2021 to 2022, that number was 48. A new law aims to stop this trend. It also allows more teens between age 13 to 15 to be tried as adults, bypassing juvenile court. It lets judges decide whether to release names, photos, and other information about juveniles accused of a violent crime. In emergency situations, law enforcement can release that information without a court order.
It was determined that at least in one case we've had in the state, the inability of law enforcement to release the identity of a juvenile believed to have committed a homicide, you know, had the risk of putting the public safety at risk.
The new law also mandates all juveniles charged with felonies receive a mental health assessment and, if necessary, be provided a care team to work with.
Maybe one of the biggest stories, in a long time. Colorado's top court says former President Trump shouldn't be on the ballot.
Colorado, one of a handful of states where people brought these challenges, including North Carolina. Up next, a UNC Chapel Hill professor and one of the top constitutional scholars in this country gives his view of the decision.
Plus, more forever chemicals found in the Cape Fear River, the new method researchers used, and where on the river they found it. Former President Donald Trump may not appear on the 2024 primary ballot in at least one state, Colorado. The Supreme Court there ruling he, quote, engaged in insurrection when he tried to overturn the 2020 presidential election.
The court ruled he is thus ineligible to hold office, citing the 14th Amendment, and they disqualified him from Colorado's primary ballot. Tonight, we're hearing from one of the nation's top constitutional scholars, a professor at UNC Chapel Hill.
WRIL's Lena Tillett spoke to him about the implications here of this ruling and what could happen next.
And this ruling will almost certainly head to the U.S. Supreme Court. Similar cases were made in several other states, including North Carolina. And what happens next could have enormous implications for next year's election. And joining me now to help make sense of all this is Michael Gerhardt. He is the Burton Craig Distinguished Professor of Jurisprudence at UNC's School of Law and the author of the upcoming book, The Law of Presidential Impeachment. Professor Gerhardt, thank you so much for joining us. Can you briefly just describe the Colorado Supreme Court's ruling here and the constitutional argument it makes?
Yes, I'm happy to do that, and thank you for having me. The Colorado Supreme Court essentially ruled that under part of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, Donald Trump meets the definition of the kinds of people who are ineligible because they engaged in or encouraged insurrection, or gave comfort and aid to America's enemies. According to the Colorado Supreme Court, Trump was found, as a matter of fact, to have incited insurrection. And as a result, he is ineligible under the terms of the 14th Amendment.
So a lower court ruling in Colorado said that the office of the president does not apply to this particular clause in the 14th Amendment. So how does this court justify that it does? And where do you fall on this?
I agree with the best scholarship on this issue, and that's the foundation on which the Colorado Supreme Court rested its decision. The best scholarship on this issue of who is covered by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment suggests that the president is, of course, covered. The actual language of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment refers to officers of the United States, which effectively means everybody who serves under the president of the United States. And it would be absurd to think that everybody but the president or vice president is rendered ineligible because they incited insurrection. Keep in mind, this section was drafted in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War. And if the president were not covered, that would have meant that Jefferson Davis would have been eligible to run for the presidency of the United States and even win it and occupy that office. And I think that's an absurd consideration given the agenda of the people who drafted the 14th Amendment.
So this ruling, of course, has not actually taken effect yet. The court is giving former President Trump's legal team time to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the high court, of course, has a 6-3 conservative to liberal split. But this argument by Colorado Supreme Court is an originalist reading of the Constitution, something that I would think conservative justices may ideologically fall in line more with. So where do you see the justices falling on this?
I think that's a really important point. I think this is going to be a challenge for the Supreme Court because the justices, as you've just said, make a lot of sort of pronouncements about how we all ought to follow, and particularly how they ought to follow the original meaning of the Constitution. And the scholars who put together the best research on this are originalists. And they suggest that Trump is covered by the language of that amendment. And it would be ironic for the justices to disregard the plain language and the original meaning of the language in favor of some other kind of research or finding that ignores the language and original meaning.
So many Republicans are furious, incensed about this, saying that this should be left up to voters. How do you respond to that?
I respond that the Constitution of the United States controls the situation. They may be upset by it, but the language of Section 3, and I encourage your listeners to read it, plainly says that anyone who's sworn an oath to defend the country, to defend the Constitution, but incites or engages in insurrection is ineligible to serve in an office of the United States. And that seems to fit Trump very neatly.
Top Republican state lawmakers and our state senator Tom Tillis both said today that they are now looking at legislation that would only allow top federal courts to make ballot decisions like this. What do you make of that?
Well, Senator Tillis, I assume, is talking about trying to create federal legislation on this question. And I doubt very seriously he's going to get a majority in the Senate to agree with that. But even if there were such a federal statute, it's probably unconstitutional to exclude state courts from rendering decisions like the Colorado Supreme Court just did.
Professor Gerhardt, thank you so much for your insight tonight. It was very helpful.
Thanks for having me.
A fascinating and informative conversation. Let's get over to meteorologist Mike Mays as we look ahead to the weekend and, of course, that Christmas forecast, Mike.
Yeah, we're looking at a warm-up as we head into the Christmas holiday and then wet weather post-Christmas. We're looking out there right now, a lot of folks on the ice rink over in Fenton. A beautiful evening, but it's a cold one. It's falling fast on the thermometer, 38 out at RDU. The dew point is at 20. We have mostly clear skies with the dry air and the mainly clear sky. Temperatures will continue to tank, and by daybreak, we should all be in the 20s. Probably not the widespread teens that we saw this morning in the Sand Hills and over toward Chatham County, but it will be close. Right now in Southern Pines, it's 33, 32 at Roxboro, 39 Fayetteville, 33 in Goldsboro. And as we head through the evening, 38 right now, 35 at 9 o'clock. By 11 o'clock, we're down to about 33 here in the Triangle. We're going to bottom out to about 26 for the low. So we have our eyes on our next two systems. This one here is bringing moisture to the southwest, eventually making its way into the plains tomorrow, but it will fall apart before it gets here Saturday. We're not concerned about this one. This is the one, the big rainmaker, the way it's looking on the American model and especially European model. The European model is pumping out almost 2 inches of rain for us, and we'll watch how this develops through the days because it looks like it's going to be an impactful system across the country. First over the southwest, then the plains Saturday and Sunday, and for us Monday night and Tuesday. Here's future cast. We go through time by 7 a.m. Christmas morning. We're looking at cloudy skies here. Christmas Eve likely to be mostly sunny, a high in the 60s, likely to be in the 60s for Christmas Day. Christmas night, as of current timing, this rain moves in. Looks like it could be heavy during the day Tuesday, as you can see here on Futurecast. And this extends all the way up into the Ohio Valley in the upper Midwest. There's rain, there's snow, there's freezing rain. For us, it's just rain this time around. There could be a few isolated thunderstorms. Too early to call for the potential for severe weather. We'll try to iron that out in the days ahead. By 5 o'clock Tuesday, still looking at a pretty healthy rain. Behind this system. Overcast skies for Wednesday, mainly some light rain. But you notice the big spin here. It's an upper level low still influencing our weather. So it may just remain unsettled into Thursday and Friday as well. But the models haven't outlined that just yet. By Thursday, we're looking at rain up in the northeast and still some precipitation through the Ohio Valley. So it could be quite a mess. Our forecast tonight, another hard freeze expected with 25 in South Hill, 24 Southern Pines, 26 in Goldsboro. Tomorrow, partly to maybe mostly cloudy. It's a lot of thick upper level clouds moving in. Our highs deeper into the 50s. We have 50 added RDU today. It was 49 in Fayetteville, 56 for us here in Raleigh tomorrow, 57 in Fayetteville. Your 7-day forecast, we stay in the 50s for the next 3 days. Winter officially arrives tomorrow, Sunday and Monday, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, mild with 60s. Last Christmas, we had a high of 40 and a low of 18. That's not going to happen this time around. And rain chances going up Monday night, Tuesday, and into Wednesday. It could be quite wet.
All right, Mike, thank you.
Researchers at UNC Chapel Hill have a new way of looking for PFAS in water.
Up next, how they found 11 new forms of the cancer-causing chemicals in the Cape Fear River.
Researchers at UNC Chapel Hill have discovered 11 additional types of forever chemicals in the Cape Fear River. Eight of them were discovered for the very first time, previously unknown to the EPA. The researchers still don't know where chemicals came from. They say they took most of the samples near the Chemours Fayetteville Works plant. The new findings again alarmed communities relying on that river for drinking water.
Is it harmful to our health, to our family, to our community, to our environment? Who's responsible for contaminating our water with these toxins? What are they doing to correct the problem?
Chemours did not answer questions about whether the substances found in the study were used or manufactured at the facility.
Well, RDU is anticipating potentially record-breaking passenger traffic through the end of the year. They expect Christmas Eve to be the busiest day. 54,000 passengers will travel through RDU that day alone. Between last Friday through January 2nd, that's kind of the period they're weighing here, they expect 806,000 people to fly through RDU. That is higher than this time during 2019, certainly more than last year. Mm-hmm. So very, very busy.
Yep.
Thanks for being with us tonight.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50. Good night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.